Since forming in 1994, Manitoba's Doc Walker, made up of Chris Thorsteinson and Dave Wassilou, have become one of Canada's most recognized country acts. Over nearly three decades together, they have won a Juno Award, 14 Canadian Country Music Association Awards. They have 21 top 10 Canadian country radio singles, 8 number one CMT videos, and they have accumulated millions of streams. Their breakthrough album, Curve, was released back in 2001. This September, Doc Walker celebrated the 20th anniversary of their iconic hit, Rocket Girl, and they released a remixed version of that song. They've been touring the last few weeks with Lone Star, Sawyer Brown, and George Kenyon across Alberta, Saskatchewan, and British Columbia. That tour recently wrapped up. We'll talk to him about that. And my pleasure now to welcome Doc Walker's Chris Thorsteinson. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great, Dave. Nice to be back chatting with you.
Yeah, great to have you back. You've been here several times over the years, so it's always great to catch up. And of course, during the show, we're going to play a couple of songs, including Rocket Girl and That Train, which is one of my favorites. So that's the second song that I picked myself. Let's talk about this tour, first of all. What was it like touring with, I mean, I'm sure you grew up listening to these guys or following their careers, of course, Lone Star and Sawyer Brown.
Well, I mean, it was supposed to be last May, but with COVID and, you know, last couple of years, it got pushed back. But, you know, I've known about this tour for a year and a half now. The agent Nick and I were talking about it, and I've been really, really excited to get on this tour. I've, you know, growing up in the bars, playing across Canada, you know, we've played so many Sawyer Brown and Lone Star songs, sort of cutting our teeth in the bars. But I'm going to start off with a funny little story here. Sure. Years ago, my parents used to take my sister and I down to Grand Forks from Winnipeg and go shopping like most people did in Manitoba. Well, we pulled into Grand Forks and we get to our hotel and these two big Eagle tour buses pull into town. And I'm just in awe of these things and they pull right into our hotel. So, of course, I'm bugging my dad so we can go look. So we go look at them. We're taking pictures and here at Sawyer Brown's buses. And the bus driver comes out and says, "Hey, kid, you want to get a picture in the bus?" So anyway, I sat and I got a picture when I was about 8 years old in the front step of Sawyer Brown's tour bus. So I've got a picture of that. It's funny. I showed Mark, the singer for Sawyer Brown. And he told me the whole story, how that was actually Kenny Rogers' bus that Kenny practically gave to them while they were on tour. And the whole story behind the bus, and he couldn't believe it. So it was just a really cool time.
That's a full circle moment.
It definitely is. Yeah. And, you know, it became more and more full circle because we're in Red Deer and their bus broke down. And Moose Jaw. So this is, we're in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, the weekend of the Grey Cup. And their bus breaks down. So, you know, there's no transport. Like, you can't rent vans or anything because it's Grey Cup weekend.
Right.
So we had rented a nice newer tour bus from a friend of mine who owns a couple.
Yeah.
And had left our old bus, Ruby, at home. Well, here, their bus broke down and we all had to get to Saskatoon. Then they had to go to Winnipeg. So being the nice Canadian, I went to their road manager and said, "Listen, I talked to a guy who can bring our old bus from Manitoba." So I gave them our bus and we waited for our old bus to come from Manitoba, jumped in it. And they were pretty, pretty happy about that. So it's amazing how, you know, buses become a part of your life as an entertainer and even as a child.
Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly. The connection, that is incredible. And then you end up touring with Lone Star and Sawyer Brown. Those moments, I mean, when you're a kid, Chris, and you're listening to country music and following these great bands, and then one day you get to connect with them in person and open for them. It's got to be a dream come true.
Yeah, you know, I missed one show when our bus showed up because it was broken, of course, so I had to fix it. But every show that Sawyer Brown did, I'd watch most of the Lone Star, but you know, Sawyer Brown, the great songs that they had, get Step by Step and Races On are great songs. But when you really get into the, you know, Cafe on the Corner, The Walk, these years, like they're great, great country songs. And I think a lot of people I talked to that went to the shows, you know, were reminded how many great songs they had.
Yeah, you mentioned two of my favorites there on the ballad side, The Walk, which is bittersweet. It's beautiful. It's so country and real. And then the other one you mentioned, All These Years, which is so heartbreaking, but such a beautiful song.
Yeah, and, you know, watching him sing that over and over again, it was just, like I said, it was a bit surreal. And then we were in Saskatoon, and, you know, it was right after The Walk. He started talking about George Canyon, and then, you know, he did a big shout out. He goes, yeah, we'd really like to thank Doc Walker for giving us our tour bus. And everybody cheered. And it just, like I said, it was kind of emotional, like, you know, growing up and being in their tour bus when I was probably 8 years old, being on tour. It was one of the most memorable tours of my life, and I'll never forget it.
That's amazing. Let's talk about the 20th anniversary of the song Rocket Girl. And you've got a remixed version, which is very similar, but it's a new version of it. Tell me about the song in the first place when it was pitched to you. Now, this was written by Jason McCoy. And forgive me, was there another writer on that song? Or was it?
Yeah, Denny Carr. He also wrote She Hasn't Always Been This Way with Paul Thorne, another song on that record. And then Denny and I and Dave, we wrote a lot of songs together. He's a fantastic writer, and along with Jason. But, you know, I mean, it's so long ago, and I tell my kids about it, and, you know, people that are, you know, before the internet, when you actually, if you wanted somebody to hear a song, you had to mail a CD or a cassette.
Right.
And, you know, you had to wait 5 or 6 days to get it. Like, it's not like you send a song and you're mad because 10 minutes later they haven't listened to it. But
that's right.
So, yeah. So we were in North Battleford Casino, and Ron Kitchener, who was managing Jason and us at the same time, I guess Jason didn't think the song fit on his new album he was doing. So, you know, Ron said, you should listen to this song. And, well, Dave and I had been writing. We wrote written shows for E, and we thought we were pretty darn good writers. So we're like, well, you know, we could write our own songs. Why are we taking Jason McCoy's leftovers, you know? So anyway, we weren't expecting much, but then we got the cassette that he sent to the casino in North Battleford. So we found a cassette player and hooked it up to the PA system and listened to it. And I think we listened to it 4 times in a row without saying a word. And I remember Dave just looked at me and goes, man, I think McCoy's crazy. Why is he not recording that? So, but you know, the thing is it back then it was so different. It didn't sound like a radio hit per se, right? Like when you're listening to songs, of course, when you're trying to break into radio and into the country music market, it's all radio, radio, radio. So, you know, we approached that song as a B-side track, basically, because there was nothing really out there like it. And we thought, oh, this is never going to be on radio. So, you know, we didn't overproduce it to the point, and we didn't really overthink it. And I think that's really the magic and the honesty to that song, is that we just went in there and recorded it the way we figured the song should be recorded. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we ended up, I think it was CMT actually wanted to release that to do, because they wanted to do a video. They figured it'd be a good video. So we're like, oh, okay. And I mean, the rest is history. It took off. And I, you know, I think we have to give a lot of credit to Train. I mean, they had Drops of Jupiter out right at the same time. And that song kind of has a little bit of the same vibe as Drops of Jupiter. So I think that helped radio go, hey, well, if Drops of Jupiter is, you know, number one in the world, you know, I think maybe a country song that kind of sounds like it might work. So I think it was just the stars all aligned at the same time, and it turned out great.
That's an interesting connection between Doc Walker and Train, and timing of songs like that. That's incredible. You never know what's going to assist with the success of a song, right? The right timing is a big thing.
Well, yeah, I guess it's good and bad timing too, because I mean, we were like, oh man, this song's ripping up the charts. We're going to sell tons of records. Well, I'm like, everybody started talking about how they love the song. I'm like, would you buy the record? And said, no, we got it off LimeWire. I'm like, what's LimeWire? What's Napster?
Yeah.
So it was right when that came out. So you know, we finally get a hit in the radio, and then everything's free. It was just like, I mean, if we didn't have bad luck, we wouldn't have any.
Yeah, exactly. Willie said that. Yes. I love it. Now, yeah, it's always, I mean, it's a pleasant surprise when a song that you love, of course, but you don't think it might be radio, success at radio, and then it does. It's kind of unexpected, and that's a good thing. I wonder if Jason, after he heard it, did he ever say to you, man, now I wish I'd kept that song.
You know, no, he didn't. We've talked about it a lot, and you know, he just loves the way that it turned out. And I think when we talked about the fact that we didn't overthink it, I think that's what he was really, you know, happy about with the production. That, and you know, honestly, it didn't sound that great. Like, it wasn't like a great. That's why it was nice to, you know, get back into the studio and remix the drums and. A lot of that Murray just added a few guitar parts. We didn't want to change it too much, but we wanted to take some more time in the mixing and the mastering process to make it sound really good.
Well, she said, I got this hat in California from a man on the street whose name was Joe. Have you ever been to California? Well, you really gotta go. She said, I knew a boy down in Miami. Well, he was a welder just like you. She said, I love the ocean in Miami. I've never seen anything quite so blue. And I say, hey, where are we going today, Rocket Girl? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world, Rocket Girl. Have you ever been to Alberta? A wheat field as far as you can see. Have you ever seen the prairies? Well, someday I'll take you there with me. And I just say, hey, where are we going today? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world, Rocket Girl. I never tell her she's been busted. I know she's never been anywhere just like me. But it makes her feel like Cinderella. And I get to see the world for free. I just say, hey, where are we going today, Rocket Girl? Tell me what life is like past that city limit sign. Dream your dreams in my ear. Baby, just get me out of here and fly me around this world. Thank you.
there's a lot of songs out there, like with Doc Walker over the years, like, you know, the one you mentioned, That Train. God, I never, ever imagined that would be on radio, you know. And then Driving With The Brakes On, same thing. And even That's All, that Genesis cover, those were all basically songs that we cut because we loved them. And we thought, hey, this would be a good B-side track somebody might like someday.
Yeah, it's always great when a B-side track, or one that you think is a B-side track, catches on, because sometimes it's just the magic of that song. It's not because you, like you said before, you didn't overthink it. You didn't try to make something a radio hit. Maybe the not trying had some magic to it.
Well, I think there might be some younger kids listening to this podcast that might be like, what is a B-side track?
Right, exactly. But, should explain.
Well, back in the day, like, I always found that when you were a fan of a band, like, say, a Blue Rodeo record or something, you know that Try was the big single, but then you'd sort of dig deep into the record, even the Tragically Hip records, you know, they'd have their big hits, but then you'd find these gems on the B-side or the ones that weren't released that I think really creates the personality of the band, because that's when the band gets to sort of be themselves and record a song and record it the way they want, because they don't have the pressure of, hey, this is a big radio hit. So,
right.
Yeah. I always believe in those B-side tracks that just create personality.
Yeah. That's a great way of putting it. And yeah, a 45, which was the old records, or the smaller ones, A-side was the hit or potentially the hit, and B-side was, I guess, a track that wasn't supposed to be a hit. And then there's album cuts too, which is, of course, when people listen to albums, and there are still albums out there, it's the ones that aren't released to radio that sometimes people love the most, because there's something special about them. But let's just stay on Rocket Girl for just a couple more moments. And what have people told you over the years, Chris, about this song and what it is about the song that they like?
Well, you know, I think with this song, it's so open-ended. Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. After singing it for 20 years, I still sometimes, you know, I'll make up a new story in my head what it's about. And I think that's the great thing about that song, is that it's vague enough that you can take it and apply it to your life, or somebody can apply it to their life and connect with it. It's not so specific that, you know, you're having a heartbreak because of this, or you're sad because of that. It's just sort of an open-ended, feel good, let's just get out of here and dream of not being in this crappy place that we're in. And I think that's what really kind of, you know, it led people to believe that there's something better just down the road.
Right. And that's a very hopeful message. Yeah. Which is why people are drawn to the song. We've talked about this story on the show before, and I'm sure you've told it many times, but I'm sure there's some people out there who don't know where the name Doc Walker comes from. And it's a great story. It's a great name, but then you hear, oh, okay, there's a story behind it.
Well, it's kind of a dumb story. And I tried to think of better. I tried to make up better ones over the years. I know in Portage the Prairie one time I was listening to the radio, and one of the announcers said, I think they got their name from a local doctor in town. And I'm like, well, that sounds really horrible with a band. So really, I had to tell the truth. Like, the story is that I used to have, and I still to this day have, allergies. So my mom had sent my cold medication, like my whatever you call it, I don't know if it was Sudafed back then or whatever it was, to clear my nostrils, gave it to my buddy Jason Walker. And so anyway, because he was just a friend that helped load gear and stuff. So we get to the gig, and I'm like, hey, do you have that Claritin or whatever it is? He goes, oh, I forgot it at home. I'm like, oh, good going, Doc Walker. And I thought, well, that's got a cool ring to it. And then somebody goes, well, what's the band called? I'm like, Doc Walker. It kind of stuck. Because it was just, you know, we were starting the band, and we had to learn 40 songs to play this wedding. It was a family reunion I had to play, and my mom booked us in, and we didn't know any songs. So we had about a month to learn 40 songs. We didn't have a band name.
Wow.
And then it kind of stuck. And, you know, over the years we've talked about changing it, but I mean, if you really look at the Beatles or the Eagles, they're not great band names.
No.
They're just great bands.
Yeah.
Like, I think Florida Georgia Line is a great name. Not crazy about the band, but I love the name. Blue Rodeo is a great name.
Yeah,
I mean, you could be a crappy band and that's still a great name. But, you know, if you think of the Eagles or the Beatles,
Right. Beetles are bugs. Yeah. When you think about
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Like, I don't know, even like Foreigner or you just go through all these names. And when you really break it down, if they were a really terrible band, it would be a terrible name.
I've thought about that too. Like even a name like U2.
I mean, yeah.
That doesn't mean anything, but because the band is great, or Green Day. So I agree with what you're saying. Like when the band becomes great, as Doc Walker is, then the name just makes sense. And so to me, Doc Walker sounds great.
Well, but, because you're putting like the songs, like say Blue Rodeo, for example, you hear Cry, you hear all these great songs, The Tragically Hip, you know, there's just endless amounts of songs. You know, it just, I think you associate what the band is with the name, and it becomes cool or not. But
right.
I think it's just, you know, consistently trying to make good songs helped make that crappy name a little bit better.
Oh, that's too funny. And you can take a song like the Genesis song and make it country.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? The funniest one was Driving With The Brakes On, because it's a Delamitri song. You remember Roll To Me by Delamitri?
Yeah, but I didn't know that was
that
a Delamitri
song. That's like 3 minutes, two and a half minutes long that gets played before the news all the time.
Right.
Well, so that was one of their releases, and it didn't really do that well. But Randy, the head of Universal at the time, sent us the song to listen to, and it was pretty weird sounding. Like it had this weird drum, like almost a Phil Collins drum thing going on. Like I can feel it coming in the air at night kind of thing. And wow. we just couldn't get it to sound good or sound like us. And our bass player at the time was joking around saying, well, all you guys are trying to do is make it country. So why don't you just go like this? And he starts playing the typical bass country thing on boom, 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 boom as a joke.
Right.
And then so the drummer starts playing that thing and Dave starts strumming the acoustic. And then we kind of looked at each other and went, well, what if we kind of slowed that down a bit and made a real Eagles kind of sound? So we started playing a real kind of simple Eagles strum with a country bass, and I started singing it, and the rest is it turned out perfect. It's so different than the original. I remember we got an email from the singer for Delamitri, and he was like, "Do you guys know this is a sad song?" So I don't think you liked it, but whatever.
Yeah, it's interesting how a song can be interpreted, and in that case, you had to steer it more towards a country sound. But you can take any song really from any genre, just about, and I've heard it. And
that's been one of our shticks live. I think we've made Eminem. What else have we done? God, Kiss, Beyonce. we do a lot of songs country. It gets goofy.
Have you done the Prince of Bel-Air, the theme song?
Yes, we have.
Okay, I've heard a lot of country people do that.
Yeah, it was when Joey Landreth was playing with us. He just started spouting that off one day. I think we were at the Belleville Theater when he did that. We just all hit the ground laughing.
Now, speaking about the Eagles, because in a lot of your songs, you guys do have those harmonies that have that Eagle sound. And I love the Eagles. Who doesn't? So many great songs. And another song we're going to hear on the show is That Train. And of course, when you get to the chorus and the harmonies, I'm hearing Eagles on this song.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. That song, I wrote the chorus probably 2 years before we wrote it. Well, I was just sitting at home, and I love Old Alabama and Restless Heart too. I was a huge Restless Heart fan. So I got this new recording Pro Tools thing. My first Pro Tools, where you could have like as many tracks as you want. Cause you used to have the old like 4-track or 8-track cassettes where you only had 8 tracks. Well, with Pro Tools, I could have like 25 or 100. So of course, the first thing I do is I'm like, I want to record harmonies. So I literally wrote that chorus in about 5 minutes just so I could start singing harmonies.
Wow.
And then I started layering all these harmonies over top. And it wasn't until about a year and a half, 2 years later, we're in Nashville. And David brought it up when we were writing with a guy by the name of Stacy Weidlitz, who actually wrote She's Like the Wind with Patrick Swayze. Oh, yeah. Dirty Dancing. So, of course, he lived in a mansion. But so Dave says, well, what about that chorus idea you had with all the harmonies? So I was like, oh, I don't even know what that's about. So I pulled it out and we played it. And then we just sat and talked about different ideas and different issues that people have in life, and mm-hmm. how, you know, you think you're going to get off that, you know, train, but man, you still get back on that train. So it worked out really well. And then, you know, Murray's guitar playing on that song in the studio was just jaw dropping. I think that made the song, and it's a real country song.
It is. And I'm sure this is one of those songs, Chris, that fans come up to you or write you and tell you that this song has touched them in a certain way and they've been able to relate to it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, the one thing we've always wanted to do is have songs with a little bit of meat in the bones. I think, you know, some of the stuff back in the 70s and even 60s, you know, Stand By Your Man and Divorce, and a lot of these songs back then, they're pretty gritty. Like they got right to the point and didn't really sugarcoat things. They just said it. And I think with whether it be Driving to the Brakes On or that train, that was the goal to that. We didn't really think radio was going to accept it because it was pretty to the point, but you know, it did work out. And you know, I'm thankful for that, because, you know, to make your songs as honest as possible is what you want to do. And then that in turn, you know, connects with other people.
Yeah. 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 And it can make a huge difference in someone's life, a song they hear on the radio and then they stream it and they listen to it. And that could be their go-to song to feel good, to inspire them, to make them feel something, which obviously country music does quite, quite well.
Yeah. I remember that train story, we were playing a rodeo dance, and it had to be 2,000 really, really intoxicated people there. And so we did two encores and they wanted one more song. And I'm like, oh, what? And then Dave goes, you know, we forgot to play That Train tonight. I'm like, oh, our third encore, we're going to go up there and play a 3/4 time ballad. He's like, well, that's all we got left. So anyway, we go up there, and I'd never felt that song that powerful in my life. Like, I couldn't believe how the crowd kind of just moved with the song. And then Murray, the solo that Murray did at the end was about 15 times better than the record. And it was like on a speaker, just wailing on his guitar, and the crowd was going nuts. I'm like, who would have ever thought the third encore we'd end with That Train? But you never know. It's you can't predict stuff like that. It just happens.
He woke up on a cold floor in a motel on the south side of nowhere, and he swore that this is the last time, like the last time before, just like the last time before. But the wheels keep turning around, the engines, they never slow down, and he knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but he still got on that train. And there's a girl down in Georgia, broken homecoming queen, knocked around black and blue, said this is the last time, this time I know that we're through. Oh, this time I swear that we're through. But the wheels keep turning, they never slowed down, and she knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but she still got on that train. I wake up in a cold bed,
playing shows every night on this long, lonely road. I'm thinking of you, and I just wanna come home. Oh, but I'm just too far from home. And the wheels keep turning around, the engines, they never slow down. And I knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but I still got on that train. Yeah, I knew that these tracks would lead to heartache and pain, but I still got on that train.
And have you covered, you mentioned Alabama and Restless Heart, two of my favorite groups growing up have all of Alabama's records, Restless Heart as well. Do you cover their songs at all in your shows?
The odd time I'll sing the fans acoustically.
Yeah, Alabama song, great.
Yeah, I love that song. That's one of my favorite songs. We've actually, one of my favorite artists, the rodeo guy, I'm a brain fart here right now for some reason.
Is it Mo Bandy?
No. It's Everything That Glitters.
Dan Seals, yeah.
Dan Seals. Love, I don't know why song. I couldn't think. That's one of my favorite records, is Dan Seals in a Quiet Room, that acoustic versions he does of all his songs.
Yeah.
So one of our records, we actually did They Rage On as a cover. So, but when we do our acoustic shows, Dave and I, or if even on a full show, Dave and I break it down and do a couple acoustic songs, and I usually do Everything That Glitters. That's because it's such a beautiful song.
Oh, yeah. Love that song from Dan Seals about his daughter and the rodeo. And then, of course, Addicted is another great song of his. And Restless Heart. I mean, the songs go on and on. But I could hear you guys doing all of their songs. But A Tender Lie, The Bluest Eyes in Texas.
Yeah.
You know,
I did a demo of Ghost in This House by Shenandoah.
Oh, yeah.
And because I didn't know this, but there's about 4,000 versions of that song on.
Oh, really?
If you just search it. Yeah. Alison Krauss has one that's super slow, but beautiful. But anyway, I did and we may do it someday, but I did almost a ELO kind of feel with it, where big acoustics and almost Tom Petty-ish, where it's a little faster and straight ahead and kind of 80s pop. And it really worked with that song, and one of my favorite songs and bands as well.
Oh, Shenandoah. And that song, I remember, was written by Hugh Prestwood, who wrote a ton of great songs back in the day. But Shenandoah with Another Sunday in the South and Mama Knows.
Well, you know, when we first started writing in Nashville, I was, you know, I've been starstruck a lot in my life. And it's funny how it's not usually by, like, say, Keith Urban or somebody like that. When we went to go write with Robert Ellis Oral for the first time,
right?
He had that song "Boom, It Was Over." It was one of his songs he had.
Yeah,
but he also wrote "Next to You, Next to Me" for Shenandoah.
Right,
So he was one of the first guys we wrote with in Nashville. So I'm just like, we're trying to write, and all I'm doing is asking him like questions about the song, and it was pretty cool. But we ended up writing shows for you that day, so it turned out to be a good day. Yeah.
That's a great tune. Wow. That must be great to be able to write with writers. I'm sure you've done it many times, who have those plaques on the wall and songs that you know. But I get that it would be either not intimidating necessarily, because I know the writers are all nice, but you're kind of in awe and want to ask them about these songs.
Absolutely. Like, we wrote on one of our records, a song called Stay Brave. It's one of my favorite songs that we've ever written. Never released, but it was written with Darryl Brown. And I remember going to his house with Murray and Dave and writing, and he wrote You'll Think of Me for Keith Urban.
Right.
And I mean, that was voted one of the, because in Nashville, they have the songs I wish, the songs we wish we wrote.
Right.
Where everybody votes on, oh, okay, well, what song this year came out that you wish you wrote that one? Well, that one won it, of course, because it's just, it's just flawless. Yeah, so we wrote a song called Stay Brave with Daryl. And when we were done, I remember Dave and Murray and I went for a beer after and we're like, did that seem like university to you? Like, it was just, it's like he kind of schooled us in how to write, you know, because he's such a phenomenal writer. And, you know, we'd written Beautiful Life and he just heard that before it was released. So he knew that we could write songs, but it was just so amazing to sit with somebody who's that intelligent when it comes to writing and feeling and like a bigger picture to the song, not just, hey, does this rhyme is and does it sound good? It was just life, like life lessons and what's this going to do and who's going to like it. It just blew me away.
And can you learn enough from sessions like that, that you take away something, one of their tools, tricks of the trade to write and apply it down the road?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think Dave, he's more of the craftsman when it comes to the songwriting. It's funny, he compares me a lot to Robert Ellis Oral because we call Robert Ellis Oral a REO speedwriter. Because we wrote Show Is Free in about 15 minutes.
Wow.
But, you know, then you got to fix a lot of lines because it's just sort of blurting stuff out. And that's sort of me. I'm the story guy that just comes up and gets excited with these stupid ideas. And then Dave goes and works in the song for 3 weeks and makes it seamless and perfect because he's, you know, he's just, he's way more patient than I am.
What's ahead for Doc Walker, Chris, in for the rest of this year and heading into 2023? What have you got planned?
Well, we've got some new music that we want to get into the studio. We're also going to get together with Murray and do some more writing. You know, Murray hasn't played live with us for years, but I mean, it's funny how he's played in the studio on a lot of the songs and we end up writing with him most of the time and hanging out. So it's not like, it's like he's still in the band, but just doesn't go on the road. And you know, he didn't really join until Everyone Aboard. So, you know, we had Murray playing on all the songs on Curve and before he joined the band. So because he was our guitar player, our guitar teacher growing up, he was friends with our sisters in school.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, she was all from Portage of Prairie and went to school with my sister and Dave's sister. And he was sort of the guitar god of Portage of Prairie. So we all took lessons from him. But we're all going to get together and do some writing up at the cabin and get some more songs ready to release. And I think sort of at this stage of our career and with the way music is being put out into the world now, you know, I was talking to George Canyon about this a lot. He's got a new record coming out and he's excited that it's sort of the first time that, you know, it's not like we don't want to get played on radio. Believe me, if radio likes it, I'd love it if they played it. But it's not really like it used to be 10 years ago where, you know, it had to be that way. Now as an artist, and mostly after being around long enough, we can kind of do those Johnny Cash kind of style or the Willie Nelson or Lyle Lovett style where, hey, this is a record we want to make or these are songs we want to try.
Right.
You can just put them out there. And they're accessible. There's not the gatekeepers like, you know, the record companies or radio. It can go right to the fans. So it's pretty exciting time for artists who've got a fan base that still have something to say. You know, like, I mean, if this was 15 years ago and we wanted to put a record out, the record company would probably be like, there's no way we're releasing that or paying for it for that. but now we can kind of do it. So it's pretty exciting. And we said, even though we've been around for a while, we still got lots of songs, lots of drive to get up on stage and play, mostly after, you know, the last couple of years with COVID. I can just feel a sense of excitement with right from the crew guys to the venue people, to the band and everybody, just to get out there and be in front of the people.
To be back again, exactly, after such an unusual time and a prolonged time, and to be back for you guys, the excitement and the fans who finally get to be at shows with other people and in large numbers. It's great. Great feeling.
Well, can you imagine how COVID was for me, knowing before COVID that we were going to do a tour with Sawyer Brown and Lone Star and having to wait for COVID to end? I was like, you know, like, okay, we're going to do it in March. And then like, no, we're going to have to push it back to February or whenever. I'm like, no. So it was a pretty painful time for me because if I didn't have anything planned, it wouldn't have been so bad. I mean, I really enjoyed spending the time with the family, but just knowing you were, when everything was open, you're going to be able to go on this tour was just, it was, ugh, man, it killed me.
Ah, I don't doubt it. That's something that you had waited for. And then finally, in the last month, you got to do that with the Lone Star, Sawyer Brown. And of course, George Kanyon joined you on that tour as well. Yeah. Chris, thank you so much. Say hello to Dave for me. And it's been great chatting with you as always.
Yeah, it's always a blast talking to you, Dave, and anytime.
Awesome. I look forward to that. We'll do it again. Once again, I've been chatting with Chris Thorstenson from Doc Walker. Of course, the other member is Dave Wasilu, and they're celebrating the 20th anniversary of their iconic hit, Rocket Girl, which we heard earlier on the show. And of course, we also heard their great song, That Train. I'm Dave Woods, keeping it country.